Yeah, I hope we don't get another. We had a summer a couple years ago that was like 110 degrees every single day
And you know what? That's what's
for
killing me.
like.
I'm like worried, like if there's gonna be a catch to this. And that's usually how that's usually how it works, isn't it? You know, if you have, oh yeah, the winter's it was so nice and pleasant, and that means you're just gonna walk outside and you're gonna start melting. Like, why?
Yeah, everyone here is saying summer is coming. Like, yeah, like we're all in
Doom
for
is coming. Summer will
That's
soon
pretty
be
serious.
here.
Coming.
That's
Yeah.
morbid.
I hate summer.
Summer
I
is
like
here.
winter.
I do too,
Yeah.
man. I mean, I like the cold weather, and I didn't get none of that this year, man.
Whatever. 50 degrees is cold.
So
Abby,
I drove everyone.
please, that's chilly. Ain't no
I
cold.
confused people. Oh,
A little
50?
chilly.
Dude, that's summer weather. That's what I had today. I went outside and thought, oh, it's spring.
Yeah, you're.
Welcome to the Stories for Nerds podcast, where avid sci-fi and fantasy readers can connect with authors who not only enjoy writing your latest adventures, but also love to discuss the storytelling relevance and inspiration behind video games, movies, television shows, and all things popular in modern epic nerd culture entertainment. And now, with another epic episode, here are your hosts for SFN.
Okay, what's up, everybody? Welcome to our latest episode of the Stories for Nerds podcast. I am Raphael M. Jordan, and as usual, I have the pleasure of being here alongside Scott Parkin and Abby Goldsmith. What's going on, you two?
Hey there.
Howdy,
Everyone's having a good week so far?
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Why
Indeed.
not? Why not?
Went,
Absolutely.
yeah.
just got back from the science fair with my 11-year-old. A lot of fun. Seeing 11-year-old science projects. So,
Oh
oh,
man.
fun.
It's like 5th grade or 6th grade.
Fifth grade, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that stuff back in the day. Good times, man. But we are going to be getting back into the regular routine. Last episode, we had a guest with us, Katie Cross. She did some discussions with us about her fantasy series called the Network series, and that is available for free. The first book is available for free for subscribers and to our mailing list. So be sure to check that out. But in the meantime, we are going to get started back into a very interesting discussion that I'm looking forward to get into because I think the guns are already loaded pre-gaming and stuff. But before we get into details, I just wanted to follow up and see what everyone's project status is. And so, Abby, how's your stuff coming with your book
Well,
six of these
yes. I have be well, I haven't begun to write book six yet. I'm making some
Okay.
adjustments to book five
Okay.
before I do that
What
because, you know.
was
Yeah, yeah, whatever. I mean, you know,
Well,
some
book five is
people
better than
don't.
book one or two. That's good. No, you're getting more toward the
Well,
next.
in all fairness, book five is a rough draft. It's a first draft. It's
Yeah.
not like a polished thing I've been polishing for the last like 15 years. It's a something I wrote a while ago, but I haven't touched it since then. So,
So, do you write stuff, walk away from it, and then come back for a rewrite? Or do you try to do your writing and your rewrite at the same time? Or what's
oh,
your
I
method?
try to walk away for sure. I mean, I think that's
Then.
healthy. But you know, some I think if you've rewritten or reworked something so many times, eventually walking away doesn't do anything. I think that only works if you're still relatively fresh on
I
it.
know there's one school of right creative approach that suggests that you know what? Write it once. You know, that was Heinlein's rules of writing. Write once, do not rewrite except editorial requirement. Sub finish what you write, submit, do it again. And there's a lot of folks who really believe in that method as a trust yourself to tell the right story the first time. There are others, and I'm one of them, who likes to, you know, polish and refine and you know, add a little bit of detail
Finesse.
here and there, stuff I discover later in the telling that I want to go back and make sure is set up right, things like that. But as long as you stay in the creative rather than just the mere editing.
I think that everyone has their own way, but I certainly edit way too much, and I'm very, very much trying to cut down on that and learn how to just trust myself with the story and stop caring so much about getting every little thing right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's like fighting myself on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hear that a lot from writers that they, you know, a friend of mine calls it the chattering monkey, right? Just sits on your shoulder and tells you, no, go back and redo that.
Yeah.
You better just put the clamps on the chattering monkey and move on if you can.
Someday you'll get to it.
Good job. Next. Good job. Sorry, I came off sounding really horrible there, but no, I want you to write the next one. Please write.
You're absolutely right, man. Please. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Your fans want to read it.
Yeah. And like I said before, I mean, we tend to be our own worst critics because, you know, as authors are artists, and artists, you know, tend to be the harshest critics of their own works and stuff because, you know, we're perfectionists by nature. So we want to get it as close to perfect as possible. But, I mean, we're always going to find something that we could have, you know, gone back and fixed. I mean, I can even go back and look at Projo Book 1 and I'll probably like start pulling the locks out of my head, you know, be like, man, why did I could have done. And I was like, you know what? It is what it is. You just got to keep it moving. Got to keep the train moving.
Yeah.
But moving on to you, Mr. Parkin, how's that series of yours coming on with the Gundam stuff? And
you know what, my son's actually working on that right now, the Soviet Gundam story.
Oh, okay.
He's doing the research and actually is doing some outlining, and I'm kind of standing back and letting him work on it. We're gonna co-write that one. And my 21 year old so my 21 year old, yeah, like he's mine. My son, who's 21, who will be 21 in a month or two, but anyway. Yeah, other than that, I'm actually gearing up for I submitted a couple of stories to an anthology this week, and nice. Moving on toward the short story idea just kind of blossomed in my head this week that I want to write really quickly and then get back to writing the transhumanism novel, science fiction. So
All right. Good deal, man. And speaking of outlines, that's what I was doing today. I actually finished the outline to the first segment in my next series.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. God, I miss that stuff, man.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Oh, I'm dying of envy.
The next series. Wow.
Oh, my God.
You know, for me, when I finally get there, it'll be 20 years later. After I started this one, I'll be like, it's like a whole new world. I'm going to have culture shock.
Seriously, I'm telling you. I mean, like, I forgot how much fun it is just doing the whole world building process, and just everything is just fresh and new. And I mean, I don't want to go too into this because I know that this is something that we're going to be discussing into our discussion. But, you know, it's nice, you know, having a series that's kind of like stapled and standard, and, you know, everything's kind of set in place. But, you know, eventually it's almost like you're kind of limited to this universe that, you know, you always set the rules for, and the characters and all that's already set in place. So being able to just kind of be like, okay, this is something brand new. I have these creatures and I have these characters and we've never seen them before, and we get to develop them all over again. I was just like, oh my God, I feel like I'm a kid in a candy store all over again.
Oh, so fun.
Oh yeah, it was loads and loads of fun. So I think what I'm going to do, actually, I'm going to do something similar to you, Abby. Instead of actually, you know, publishing one book at a time, I'm hoping that I can do at least 3 books out, and mm-hmm. then do those in all one sitting. So, I think I'm actually just going to go ahead and do the next outline for like the next 2 books, and go from there.
Cool. That's smart. Yeah. I'm also planning, when I do my next series, I think I'll make the books shorter, or try to like plan to make them shorter, you know?
And that's exactly what I'm doing as well. Yeah. The series is it's going to be longer than what Proja was, but it's going to have a lot more. It's going to have a lot more installments in it, because I'm definitely going to cut down on the books, just because, you know, writing 100K plus book, I mean, it's so time consuming, so demanding. And with the speed of writing that I do, I can only get out like maybe one book a year that way. Whereas, you know, people might move on to another story if they have to wait that long. So I want to cut down to smaller increments and stuff. And if you look at the way the industry is going, I mean, people seem to be kind of leaning towards that method of reading anyway. But moving on to current nerdy interests, Scott, you said you had been having some fun on Netflix.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of series recently. Almost done with Frequency, which is kind of a time travel paradox sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Watched a flick called Arc, which is another time travel story. Don't bother.
Okay. Noted.
It tried so hard. It wanted to be clever and profound. It was doing this, you know, time loop and going around again and going, learning a new thing and then going around again and learning a new thing and going around. But then the other guys figured out, the bad guys figured out, and then this, and then that, and then the other. Mm-hmm.
Too much.
It ended up getting, it was too clever for its own good. Mm-hmm. It tried really hard, but in the end, it was just so self-consciously clever that it didn't work for me. Okay. One called Glitch, which is kind of, it's not exactly zombies. It's people coming back from the dead. It's an Australian series. Really, really like that.
Okay.
Crazy Head, which was kind of silly. Paranormal humor slash buddy flick. It was very strange. And a lot of fun. An English series.
Okay.
Then a flick called iBoy, which I thought was a lot of fun.
That's on my list.
A little 90 minute thing. It stays within itself. It's very well delivered. I really liked it. So that's what I watched on Netflix these last couple weeks. And then season two of Ajin.
Okay.
Which I had not seen season two. So.
Right.
And The Magicians. Oh, The Magicians. Oh.
So is the new season any good? I haven't started. I saw the first season.
I only saw the first season. That's all that's out.
Yeah, that's all that's on Netflix right now.
Second season is coming from July, I think. Or April, maybe.
Oh, I saw ads for it. I thought it was coming out right away.
Yeah, I think it's coming out.
Well, I mean, the second season is about to start up, but it's just not going to be on Netflix.
Right. Yeah. Netflix will bring it out when the season is done. So probably
when
it's
close,
fall.
When the third season, hopefully, you know, is close to coming out.
Okay.
Yeah. But good grief, man. I mean, that's I was having this discussion with one of my homeboys about Netflix. I mean, I remember like back in the day, I used to be pretty content with like having maybe 5 to 7 things in the list. But now, I mean, Netflix has all these like new original content and stuff coming out, and now that list is like 20. And so whenever like I, you know, do have time to like, you know, watch something, I'm going through a list and I have no idea what I'm supposed to watch because it's like too many decisions. It's like,
well, the problem is now you've got Amazon doing original content as well, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the adaptation of Philip K. Dick's Man in the High Castle over there, which I really want to see because I've heard really good things about it. But you have to, you know, join their service, which right now I can't afford it. So I mean, there's an embarrassment of riches right now. If you can if you can tell a story that can be adapted for video entertainment, there's a lot of venues popping up and film producers. So
But as far as I'm concerned, I had a lot of fun the past couple of weeks. Gaming wise, I was actually playing the latest Dragon Ball Xenoverse. This Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, that's loads of fun, man. I mean, you get to make your own character and, you know, get to be involved in like the, you know, Dragon Ball universe, you know, fighting alongside like all those characters and, you know, developing your own powers and stuff. I mean, it's definitely not for everyone, but if anyone's like really, you know, into like the Dragon Ball universe, I definitely recommend it. It's a lot of fun. And speaking on that, I actually started watching Dragon Ball Super which starts air on Toonami. Now, I mean, I think they're like 70 something episodes in like Japan and stuff with the, you know, it's Japanese and it's been dubbed, but I just I just wanted to wait for the English version to come out, because while I do enjoy reading, you know, some subtitles and watching anime and in its original language, some of the voices in the original Dragon Ball voice are there. It's just, yeah. It's just like, I can't. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And then, the super high pitched.
Like, yes. Oh my God. That's
one of the things that bothers me. Yeah.
Yeah. It just kind of takes me out. I was like, man, you got this big buff dude, and he sounds like a 5-year-old or maybe like an 11-year-old who's like about to go on the verge of puberty or something. I'm just like, I was like, you know what? I'll just wait.
I will use my awesome muscles and crush you. Ah!
It's like, dude, I can't take you serious on this yelling.
Sounds like Mickey Mouse with a hernia.
Oh, gosh. Okay, and the other thing that I was watching, I actually started watching this last night, was the Santa Clarita Diet. And that's another original from Netflix with Drew Barrymore. And I'm really not a big zombie person, but this had a very different take on it. It's a comedy.
And so let me just ask. So I actually lived in Santa Clarita for 12 years. Yeah, in California. So I'm wondering if it's actually filmed or taking place in Santa Clarita.
You'd have to look at it yourself.
You'll have to watch the series and tell us whether it's actually in Santa Clarita.
Yeah. I mean, I really couldn't tell.
They filmed a lot of things in Santa Clarita, I mean, back in the day. So
did they?
Yeah, they filmed a season of 24 there, and they did several seasons of Buffy, and a few others. I can't even remember, but yeah, they liked filming there.
Okay.
So it's possible. Anyway, but Santa Clarita Diet. So like, what is this? Like,
Okay. Well.
Become zombies or what?
Drew Barry, and you know, and it's not no spoilers or anything like that, because I mean, this is what they actually say in the trailer. But in case people want to go in like completely oblivious, you know, go ahead and give you like a 1-minute spoiler alert. But Drew Barrymore and her husband, they're realtors, and she's selling. The first episode starts out with her selling a house, and all of a sudden she just gets ridiculously sick. So sick, it's disgusting, but it's hilarious because of the way that they do it, because there's just profuse vomiting. I mean, just ridiculous, just over the top vomiting, and I am cracking up hysterically while I'm eating my dinner, mind you.
Oh no!
Yeah, and so I'm sarcastically saying, like, to the TV, is like, "Well, damn, you look like you just like puked up your organs or something." And when actuality, that's exactly what she probably just did. So the premise of it is just a modern day suburban housewife. Well, she's not a housewife. Like I say, she's a realtor, but just a suburban wife trying to cope with
a housewife too. Ooh.
I know, right? Yeah, sorry, but you know, she's just trying to cope with becoming a zombie, and her family's in on it too, and it's just a lot of, you have to have like a certain, like, dark sense of humor to like laugh at the stuff that's going on, because some people just like, oh my god, this is horrible. But I mean, like I said, I'm one of those guys, and I thought it was hysterical. And just the way that, you know, the banter that they go back and stuff, it's really good. And then there's just a couple of instances where it's funny, but it kind of hits a little close to home, because I remember like this one instance where the daughter, she's, you know, she's your typical, you know, rebel female, your rebel teenage, you know, kid and stuff. And she's always like kind of speaking out, and she and her dad, they've been playing it cool for like the longest time, but eventually they hadn't said anything, but they kind of go out and they kind of look at each other, and they're like, this is crazy. I'm freaking out. What are we supposed to do? How though? But, yeah. But I mean, it's just a lot of fun. It's only 10 episodes in the season and they're only half an hour long. So it's not like you're investing too much time as you would be with a lot of the other seasons that are on there. There's like, you know, 24 episodes an hour long. So it's a quick, easy, like weekend binge, you know, that you can knock out the park real quick. So that's a lot of fun.
Cool. I'll check it out.
Oh yeah. Definitely recommend it.
I watched were a little 10 or 12, you know, somewhere between 6 and 13 episodes per series. So yeah, those are fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a safe number. But before we get into our discussion and latest news, I want to give a shout out to those people who actually responded to our previous episode question. And the last episode question was, which supporting character in a sci-fi or fantasy series stole the spotlight from a married character? So we had Anna Nichols. She said Samwise Gamgee. Of course, we spoke a lot about Sam. And then we had Alex Way. He mentioned Han Solo. We also, you know, spoke as, you know, Han. He also made a good reference to Hicks from Aliens. I didn't even think about that one. And then Joe Arianis. She mentioned Spock. That was another one we gave a shout out to. So once again, appreciate those comments. And remember, all you have to do is look up those questions on the website or on our social media outlets. Shoot your answer in there and we'll give you a shout out on the next episode. Okay, and on to our latest nerdy news. We got a couple of book recommendations. We have one called Extracted. It's a sci-fi time travel series. I'm just going to read the quick blurb of it. But it's also on the website, so you can read the full details of it. And there's also links to where it's available on Amazon and Kobo. But in 2061, a young artist invents a time machine to fix a tragedy in his past. But his good intentions turn catastrophic when an early test reveals something unexpected. The end of the world. So, I mean, in that note, sounds pretty simple, but I mean, what he does is he actually gathers like just three key individuals, and there's supposed to be like a lot of good colorful banter and stuff. And it's been number one on Amazon for quite some time, so be sure to check that out. And then going to the wonderful world of Kobo, we have epic fantasy called The 12 Kings of the Shirakai. I hope that's how I'm pronouncing it. If not, I am so sorry. But that's also available on Amazon too, and I was actually marked as the best book of 2015 on Amazon. And so it's actually part of a series, and the premise of this is Shirakai, the great city of the desert, center of commerce and culture, has been ruled from nine immemorable 12 kings, cruel, ruthless, powerful, and immortal. With their army of silver spears, their elite army of blade maidens, and their holy defenders, their terrifying aspirin, the kings uphold their positions as undisputed, invincible lords of the desert. There is no hope of freedom and under their rule. Oh, there is no hope of freedom for any under their rule. Or so it seems, until Sita, a brave young woman from the west and slums, defies the king's laws by going outside on the holy night of Bek Zaire. Actually, I think I said that right. Yeah. But yeah, it has a big Arabian vibe to it. So definitely a nice different take on the fantasy genre. So be sure to check that out. And once again, we got links to that on the website and in our show notes. And in other nerdy news, we got some Doctor Who's news going on with Missy, aka the Master, returning this season. Now, for those who are familiar with the Doctor Who series, everyone knows that Missy is the most recent incarnation of one of the Doctor's more recurring nemesis, the Master. So it was announced that she was going to be returning back in October, but there wasn't a trailer at the time. So now we actually have a trailer, and it's actually nice marketing material. So be sure to check that out on our social media outlets or on the website. Cool. And as always, be sure to check us out in our subscription list, Patreon. We're growing with the content that we are offering you guys. Like I said, we do have Katie Cross's stuff in there. And so be sure to look that up on the website. So, finally, getting into the nitty-gritty of this interesting discussion about preferences with which one's better, standalone stories or long-running series. So, I think it's safe to say we're living in a time of where, you know, series have, they've kind of made a big staple, especially like when movies and stuff, but there's still a lot of crown jewels out there, you know, with standalone times. Like, for example, we had The Martian or Arrival, just one done deals. So we are going to be discussing the pros and cons of each and figuring out which method of writing our lovely hosts prefer. So before we even got started, the guns were already loaded, so I'm just going to... We're just going to start off a nice casual, but first off, let's start with this. What do you think the benefits of writing a series is? Because, Abby, you prefer writing series, and Scott, you prefer writing standalones. So, ladies first. Abby, knock yourself out.
Well, series are clearly superior in every way.
Oh my God, so, really?
Do explain, please.
Oh yeah, pray tell. Oh my God.
Well, I mean, you know, I'd say that unless you're a political writer and you like write the book of the century or something, or you know, you're a great philosopher or whatnot, you're not going to be remembered unless you're writing a really great series, because I'm sorry, but those just stand out more in people's minds. They get more attached to the characters. You know, I would include things like Lord of the Rings, even though it's a trilogy. It's kind of a series.
It's still a series.
Yeah. I mean, it's epic enough so that it's big scope enough so that, you know, in today's world, they probably would have broken it down to 6 books or something. Mm-hmm. You know, Wheel of Time series. I could go on and on. I mean, the Xanth series, you know, we all know these series, like mm-hmm. the Hitchhiker's Guide series. I'm not even a fan of that one. I'm sorry, but
Radio Play was a lot of fun, but yeah.
Okay, a Game of Thrones series. I mean, the Mercedes Lackey series. I can't remember what it's called. All these series. I'm just like, I could go on the Pern series. Like when readers remember a world or remember certain worlds and characters, it's almost always series because you have much, much more time to get attached and to really immerse yourself into that world and story. I think even a large standalone, it's very hard to get immersed in that way and to get that attached. Like usually a standalone, because you know, it's a standalone, or even if you don't, I mean, the characters, their story is going to come to an end. And it's very final at the end. You know, it's just like, well, it's not going anywhere from here. And you never get a sense of like an ongoing life that they're living. Like it feels more like a story to me, as opposed to like immersing yourself into a true world and true characters. It feels, the series to me feel more authentic, if they're well done, of course. I mean, you know, with the caveat that mm-hmm. anyone can write crap, but sure. Anyway, yeah.
All right. Woo. those are some big bullets. But Scott, I do not doubt your skills and your defenses and stuff. So how would you counter that statement?
I'm not sure I would counter it. Here's what I would say is I don't write series. What I like to do is write common worlds. Mm-hmm. So I like to create a universe and then tell standalone stories within the universe, knowing how they connect, but not necessarily writing the connective tissue. Mm-hmm. So Abby, for example, mentioned the Pern books, which are set in Pern and are connected by Pern, but are not necessarily specifically a single narrative broken out over time. It's a little bit different than that. So for me, if I'm dealing with the same characters and the same essential situations all the time, I get bored. I lose interest in my own property and I don't want to keep going. What I'm as interested in, right? So, you know, one of my universes is the Planetary Assessment Corporation universe, where I basically look at the intersection of corporate interests with government interests with individual interests and then see what kinds of stories come out of that. So I can set up I'm working on a 2-book set right now. Half a dozen of my short stories were set in Planetary Assessment Corporation settings, and they're all absolutely different, except that they share common elements. So for me, that's more fun to write. Mm-hmm. But to that point, I don't disagree with anything that Abby said. I think, you know, for a lot of people, and certainly the number of series that are popular in science fiction and fantasy today, mm-hmm. clearly it works, right? I watch TV series all the time. Mm-hmm. But, and having said that, I do prefer a bounded story series, not an open-ended series. So what I would like to see more of is authors who say, I'm going to write a single story that happens to take 5 books to tell. Mm. And then I'm going to write the 5 books. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I'm going to spin out some characters in a cool world and see where we go at some point in the future.
I agree with that, too. I think that writers who write series without a plan like that, you can usually tell. I mean, and from, you know, they sometimes just fly right off the rails. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's part of the thing, right? So it's not, because getting back to, let me go ahead and defend the idea of writing standalone books. Part of what I think happens when you tell a standalone story is that you're trying to address a single question mm-hmm. with some intensity. So you optimize everything in the story toward, you know, exploring this question and or its answers and coming up with some sort of semi-firm resolution, but you're really tracking a single big idea and then a second lesser idea. In a series, you can afford to have 3, 4, 5 bigger ideas because you can emphasize a different idea in each portion of the story. Right. So yes, you can build much more complex characters, much more complex situations. You can deepen your conflicts even more. You can create reversals. You can do all kinds of great stuff in series that are harder to do in the more compact space allotted to a novel, to a mm-hmm. standalone novel. But what the standalone novel does is allow you to laser focus on a specific question of specific interest, drive to that one point, and then get out of it and go on to something else.
That's true, but I mean, I mean, you could do the same thing with a short story, really.
Absolutely, and you could do the same thing with, frankly, it's kind of demoralizing that so many series can be reduced to a 1 or 2 sentence wagon train in space. I mean, you know, it is what it is.
So
that was Star Trek, by the way.
Okay, so I'm going to ask up a couple of things, and then we'll probably actually go back to some of the previous questions. But you both brought up certain points about things being easier in certain aspects of one genre, one method over the other. So from a writer's perspective, we've all written a standalone before, correct? Even if it's like a short,
yeah.
I mean, that's still a standalone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I wrote a standalone novel fairly recently, Dragons in Ancient China. I'm done with the story. I have no more story to tell. I mm-hmm. could do a series, but that wasn't what I imagined from the beginning. I imagined a story with a specific endpoint that is, to Abby's point, fairly endy.
Right. So going on that note, from an author's perspective, we'll take a step back from the readers for a quick minute. Don't worry, we'll be right back. But what do you find more challenging, writing a standalone or writing a series?
Honestly, they both have their challenges, but I've always found short stories very hard to write. I know, I guess for many people it's the opposite, but for me, stories in my mind always keep growing, like, because the characters come alive in my mind, the world comes alive. And so everything just keeps getting added to that. I think of new complications and it always just ends up growing. Right. And I have to, like, I have to focus. And if I'm going to write a short story or something, I have to, I never, first of all, I'm never as attached to it. I don't feel as emotionally attached to a short story. And so, you know, it's hard for me to make myself even care in the first place about this character where I'm going to spend, like, you know, a week of my life on and then move on. Mm. I'm just like, you know, they don't quite feel real to me in the same way. And so I have trouble with that. Mm. And then also just keeping it from growing. I have to be like, okay, you know, like this, here's my theme. Like, I have to come up with like a theme and just laser focus on it. And usually it'll take me several tries. Like, I'll write the short story of that theme, and then I'll be like, maybe that wasn't quite the theme. It needs to be refined a little. And then I have to do it again and again. I start getting bored with it. It's always just been difficult. And then with series, like, they just pop up my mind. Like, I have like at least 5 series I want to write after this one. So yeah, I know. So like, those just come on their own. I don't have to do anything.
Yeah. What about you, Scott?
So I'm going to defend the honor of short story writers for just a moment. Okay. No, actually,
I don't know if they're being attacked, but okay.
No, let me rephrase. Takes too long. Let me sum up. Okay. For many authors, the effort of creating a coherent character conflict and setting requires enough energy, which is what Abby was just saying, that having gone to all that effort, why not write a bigger story? Mm-hmm. And what that means is you have the mind of a novelist, because you think in larger stories. Right. People who write short stories and prefer short stories think about story differently than novelists do. Mm. I think people who write standalone novels think a little bit differently than series writers do, because they approach the issue of character and conflict just a little bit differently. And that's what I was trying to say before about, you know, one big idea versus potentially several big ideas in a standalone versus a series. Mm-hmm. So having said that, right, I can flip the switch. When I sit down to write a short story, I know I approach the telling of the story and the world creation very differently than I do when I sit down to write a novel. But when I sit down to write a novel, I spend at least 3 weeks up front doing nothing but research, not a single word of fiction, of prose. I'm just researching, you know, technologies, geology. I write a lot of science fiction, so I you know, look at the science and the underpinnings. I also write fantasy, and I tend to look at sociology, politics, culture, and technology. Just because it's fantasy doesn't mean it's not technological. Mm-hmm. You know, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I absolutely agree. If you're going to spend the time to do something that you find powerful, my heavens, why not? The only difference is I would tend to do a series of standalone novels set in the same universe as opposed to a single coherent series. That's the only difference.
Okay. And I would say, I mean, going back to, you know, Abby's perspective, I mean, like, that's why I had to say, I don't even know if she was like even like insulting or attacking, you know, people who write short stories, because I mean, I'm with her. I, you know, write big, and I remember writing for the Wordfire Red Unicorn anthology. They gave you 3 months in order to, you know, write this short that was, I think it had to be under 11,000 words or something like that. And I remember people, they were like submitting like the following week after that and stuff like that.
Oh, I know. Yeah, there were some that did it the same day or 2 days later.
I took on Earth every damn 3 months. I took every single month. I didn't submit it until 2 days before the deadline. And I used like every single day just to refine, because what I had to do was I had to write the story that I wanted to write. But when I finished it, it was 50,000 words. So I had to so I had to find a way to compress this fantastic, you know, passionate 50,000 word adventure into 10,000 words. And oh my God, if that wasn't if that was a torture. So on that note, I mean, I was like, man, I have nothing but mammoth for people who can, you know, tell the story, you know, in such a confined space. And granted, you know, not all standalone stories are only like anthologies. I mean, you know, a standalone story can just be a single novel that's like 80,000, 75,000 words or whatever. But still, just the fact that you're able to get everything that you need to get into like this, that one installment, it's just profound. And I'm like, what? Yeah, that's just like you said, Scott, that's just I think certain authors, they have the different mindset of approaching stuff.
Yeah, and my only argument is the story I put in the Dragon Riders anthology last year, for example, from Superstars, was fairly short, like 3,500 words.
Really?
Sorry, I wrote it in a day and a half.
You know what? Okay.
And then because there was more story I wanted to tell, I wrote another one that was 2,500 words, co-submitted them, and was able to get the one published, but not the other. Anyway, but I used the same universe that I had created this my dragon novel in, and just told an incident within that universe. So for me as a writer, it was a lot of fun because it's a full standalone short story. It does not require that you have read anything else in my dragon universe. Mm-hmm. But if you have, then you recognize the characters and there's a little additional layer of meaning and power there. And if you haven't, ideas that then, right, you can find more information about in the novel. So, you know, that's how you don't have to have everything fully encapsulated within a short story. In fact, the ones that I like the most, or a single book in a single standalone novel, mm-hmm. are the ones that suggest that there is more story to be told and leave it to you, the reader, to perform the exercise.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So going back, you know, to the reader's perspective, which ones do you prefer? I mean, just because you write short stories doesn't necessarily mean, or, you know, standalones doesn't necessarily mean that you prefer to read it, so.
I don't know. I suspect a lot of writers write what they like to read, or at least in the, yeah. I mean.
Well, I guess in that case, I'm an odd one out because I actually prefer reading standalones.
Really?
Yep. And I don't know, it might be because, especially nowadays since I'm writing as well, but I can't get too invested into reading series because that would take away a lot of time into writing. And so most of the stuff that I actually read are actually just standalones. Like, you know, when I think of like my favorite ones from back in the day, it's like Fahrenheit 451, Anthem. I mean, those are, yeah, like the only like series that I really kind of followed like to the end was Ender's Game. But beyond that, most of the stuff that I read are standalones.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I will say I'm very picky about everything I read. So, sure. I mean, you know, I think as Scott said earlier on something, you know, I only read things that come highly recommended, that I really think I'm going to like. But yeah, every once in a while I do find a new series I love, and then I just tear right through it, and I'm like, all right, I read that entire series now. Got to go back to finding another one. And I do read a lot of standalones and nonfiction. I read a pretty wide range of all genres, I would say, except for, I don't read romance, but other than that, I read a wide range. So, you know, I'd say I read at least equal amounts of standalones and series, but I prefer series when they're good.
When they're good,
yeah.
Of course, necessary.
And that's the hard part for me, is I prefer a series when it's complete. Nothing drives me nuts faster than getting two books into a 5-book series mm-hmm. and having to wait 2.5 years for the next book to come out. Mm-hmm. I read the Thomas Covenant Chronicle, the Chronicles of Thomas Covenant, the Unbelief. Drove me bug nuts because I had to keep waiting for the books to come.
But you know what, Scott? But that's kind of going back, you know, to, you know, Abby's method of publishing. I don't think you're the only one who feels that way, and that's why, you know, a lot of, you know, industry people who have insight in the industry, they always suggest, like, if you're going to write a series, you don't just throw like the one book out or the first book out. Like, you need to kind of have a library for people to kind of, you know, follow along with and stuff. And you don't necessarily have to complete the whole thing, but you need to give your readers a good, you know, a nice head start.
I think it's hilarious that switched during my, when I was paying attention to the industry. Like, I remember in the 1990s and in the early 2000s, the advice was all, don't you dare write book two. Don't ever write the next book in your series. Just wait till the first one sells. Otherwise you're an idiot. And I remember that advice, like, being given to me over and over.
Yeah.
And it switched, like, around like 2010 and later, all of a sudden everyone's like, you'd be an idiot to not write the whole series.
Well, I mean, there's a simple explanation. It's because of the internet, and
everything has changed the dynamic.
There's streaming and stuff now. There's you don't have to wait on anything anymore. Everyone wants instant gratification now. Everyone wants their stories and, everything in like one big chunk. I mean, that's why Netflix is so great, and that's why people don't have any concerns about, waiting for a new season to come up when the next season's come up, because they'll be like, oh, okay, well, you know what? I'm just going to wait and I'm just going to binge over it, because, I mean, that's how I enjoy receiving my stuff. And forcing me, to do the latter that's old school talk. So go ahead, Scott.
Well, and Netflix is an interesting example, right? Because if you're watching an episodic series that's packaged in seasons, and that's how Netflix releases, right? Season at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit different, because that's almost like, right, chapters in a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So if the novel is a series and a season is a novel, then, I get the idea that I'm willing to wait some amount of time for the second season or the third season or the fifth season or the 19th season. But give me a story that concludes sufficiently that I'm not left in the cliffhanger for a year or 2 years or 5 years. Mm-hmm. For me. Now, again, different readers are different ways. Sure. That's something that drives me nuts. It's why I won't read Orson Scott Card anymore, because he has a tendency to start series, get bored, and move on to another series without finishing the last one.
Yep.
Right? He hasn't finished his Seventh Son series yet, and it's driving me nuts because I'd like to finish it. So I won't read it until I'm sure that he's written the last book.
So I take it you haven't read Game of Thrones. You haven't read
I have not read a single word of Game of Thrones other than the title of the books, which I have on my shelf, but I have not read them.
What about A Name of the Wind?
No.
So you're hardcore. You definitely avoid these.
I don't definitely avoid them, but I haven't read them. I'm not I don't read series as often as which is a bit of a reversal, right? Because I said I prefer series because I do like stories that have familiar characters in familiar situations and can then move on to, new and unique adventures that reestablishing the rules every time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't read big series like that. I haven't read Wheel of Time. I haven't read, Game of Thrones. I haven't read any of the big series recently. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I haven't finished, Dave Farland's, Rune Lord series, because I knew he hadn't written the last book yet, and now I know he's working on it, so I'll go ahead and start reading.
Well, I better let all my readers know that this series will be complete when I start releasing it.
Oh, no. and they will be very, very appreciative of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No, I mean, dead serious, like that's how you're supposed to do series now.
And that's my thing. Just don't leave me dangling, right?
I mean, because my instinct way back when I first started writing this was to have it complete. And I heard so much advice against that I got scared and I didn't.
Mm.
And I, I kind of wish I'd been hearing the opposite advice because that everyone's giving me now. So that's kind of funny.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, if you got 3 books out of a 6 book series, my heavens, release the first 3 books, get them out there, get some fans, and that'll give you a cover to write the last book in the series. It's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing is a matter of time, or the length of time that one has to wait for the next one, because that's another thing. Like, the time that people are willing to wait for, like, the next installment, it's decreasing year by year, because at one point they used to say, okay, if you're going to do a series, you have to be sure that you have to publish like the next book the following year. Now they, over time, it eventually dwindled down to, okay, now readers, they want the next book in a series by 9 months. And I'm certain by next year, it's going to be half a year and so forth and so forth. So, I mean,
just... I think it, no, it depends on how big a name or how many fans the author has in the first place. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure that like Pierce Brown, when he wrote the Red Rising series, I'm pretty sure he had like about a year in between each of those books.
Well, yeah, but I mean, saying for, okay, I'm speaking on behalf of, like in the case of like new upcoming authors that don't have a fan base, you know, that are still trying to like get their name out and stuff. I mean, if you're a well-known author, people wait, you know, you're worth waiting for. I mean, you've already built that brand and built that rapport that people aren't going to be too naggy about unless you're like over the top. Like,
yeah, but I mean, but some of those people made a big splash with the first book kind of thing. So it's not like they were a new author with the first book.
Well, and like everything else in publishing, right? Every rule is just a guideline based on the way we understand the market today. And it very well may change tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, write what you write. And my argument is whatever you've got, get it out there, get some readers. The hard part is a lot of writers feel pressure. Once they've got a partial series written, feel pressure and seize up and can't finish the series because they get into kind of a brain lock on what to do next. Mm. And that's the hard part, right?
Well, that's not me for sure. I mean, I enjoy the act of creating the series. I get locked up with the publishing and the marketing part, but, you know, I'm not worried about where the story is going or how I'm going to end it. Right. I definitely know that.
Yeah. I mean, we discussed that like at the beginning of the discussion, there's a lot of people, they just have a great idea of something and they just kind of wing it and be like, oh, okay, well, where are we going to go with this? Whereas, you know, it's always best to kind of know, okay, this, where it's going to take you, where the conclusion is.
Yeah. I thought it was so funny. Like, you know, like I'm writing a little bit like a Star Wars type of genre. Mm-hmm. And so I told one reader, I was like, well, you know, it's going to be 6 books. And at the end, they're going to defeat the evil empire and free all the slaves in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And he was like, spoiler, I can't believe you just told me that. And I was like,
dude,
yeah. Like, is that not obvious from like, the beginning of the first book.
did you really think the bad guys were going to win? Come on, man. Right. We all know that going into a book.
Yeah, that cracked me up. I was like, you really consider that a spoiler? He was really upset about it too.
Wow. I mean, it's not what happens directly, you know, as far as the story is concerned. It's the journey. How, you know, how they overcome this thing. I mean, and that's the thing. That's what people love to read. It's like, okay, here are these great odds, that like these near impossible odds. And you have to read this story in order to find out, you know, how right. You're going to overcome it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like Wheel of Time, like, you know, that the good guys are going to defeat the bad guys. Same thing with like Lord of the Rings and so forth. Like, I mean, nobody's questioning that. Mm-hmm. But you know, but it the stories are about so much more than that. I mean, that's not what they're not really about throwing the ring into the fire or sure. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, it just kind of cracks me up.
Yeah, but I mean, that being said, we are living in a time where Game of Thrones kind of threw a monkey wrench and that stuff, so people are, you know, they do have the feeling, and you know, oh, and then there's Walking Dead. People are always on edge. It's like, well, the good guys are dying now. there's no telling that, hey, this is kind of real now. I mean, the bad guys can actually win every once in a while.
Yeah, but even with that, like Game of Thrones, you know that those zombies are coming over the wall. Like, there's no
winter
question.
Winter is coming.
Yeah, like God, they keep saying winter is coming. It's yeah, like winter is gonna come. And they keep saying
winter's
like
here, actually.
Like the dragons. Like, you know, the dragons are gonna grow up and like burn everyone to death. Like, come on. Like there's no doubt.
You know, it's gonna be funny if the complete opposite happens and I'm actually gonna like listen to this broadcast like, oh my God, we're wrong. We're so wrong.
No matter what they do.
The zombies ate the dragons.
Zombies.
But no matter what they do, someone will say, oh, well, it was so obvious from the beginning that that's what was going to happen. Duh.
Yeah.
That means you told a successful story, right? That
predictable yet satisfying.
Predictable yet
satisfying. Or, no, sorry, no, inevitable. Inevitable yet.
Yes.
Predictable. Yes. Or what is that saying? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I gotcha. But
inevitable yet unpredictable. Anyway. Okay.
Inevitable yet unpredictable. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, as far as like the various uses of storytelling is concerned now, like what do you think the receivers or like the readers and moviegoers and stuff like that, what do you think they tend to read towards? And I know like there's a bunch of complaint about a lack of originality out there. Because and I'm not speaking about reboots per se, because reboots, that's a whole nother story. But you know, a lot of people are saying there's some stuff out there is not so original anymore, because I mean, all that you have to do is just do part one or part two, and you're seeing that in video games now even. So what do you think the balance in that is?
Well, I get a little, I mean, like the whole lack of originality thing kind of triggers me a little bit. Because I mean, you know, I honestly think there's a lot of, unfortunately, this is going to be my ranting and you can hate me, but I mean, I'm just going to let it loose. But I mean, I feel like there's a lot of storytellers out there that really have nothing new to say, nothing new to add to the world. And so they're just repeating stuff they've seen. And yeah, they're not adding anything new because they don't have any originality. They don't think in terms of new. They just like to just rehash an old story. They call that original. And I'm sorry, that's not original. And so, yeah, people see that and they're like, and the airwaves are just filling up with that crap. And, you know, I do believe that there are people out there that are telling new stories that are completely original. I consider myself one, at least when it's published, you know. not right now. But, that's right.
Yeah. So you say.
But it will be.
There's some sort of causal paradox working there. Yes. I'm not original until I'm published, but I'm writing original work that's not published, therefore it's not a real... Oh, I don't know.
Wait, back up. Oh, no.
Okay, it is original, but you just haven't seen it yet. So anyway. Of course it's original.
See, and there's a really interesting question there, right? Because you see a lot of, because there are straight reboots where they try to retell the same story or the same functional universe over again. Mm-hmm. But you've also got, you know, we've had retellings of classic tales, right? And we've all read, you know, 700 versions of Cinderella. That's a different issue. Mm-hmm. You get something like, say, The Goose Girl, which is a retelling of a classic tale in, you know, and it won all kinds of awards because it was beautifully written. It was freshly imagined. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things are a lot of fun. Talking about Cinderella, what was it? Speaking of Drew Barrymore, the one that she was in.
Ever After,
right? It was a silly retelling, but it was an entertaining retelling because it went ahead and had fun with the fact that it was retelling a story in a modern, in an ancient idiom for a modern audience. And it took that and had fun with it. And you put Leonardo da Vinci in for crying out loud, right? Yeah, and that's okay.
I mean, those aside, like you know, I feel like there's a lot of people that are just not unconsciously or subconsciously retelling, like, Die Hard or, you know, some crap they saw on TV.
Well, and again, asking the question, what do you think people like? I think different writers appeal to different readers, and different readers are attracted by different kinds of stories. Some want to read comfortable worlds that don't stretch them too far,
right?
And that just give them the packaged thrills that they're used to. They read them like, you know, they read them like I eat candy. It's just far too much and far too short a time. It's just one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Others want a meal. Others want to read something that is going to challenge them or is going to stress their imagination or is going to actually make them feel and possibly even hurt for the characters. Different kinds of readers, different kinds of stories. So, you know, do what you got to do.
Absolutely. All right, you two, I think we're just going to close the discussion right there. So, closing out, what do you think a good episode question would be? Don't shout out at one of you two.
I mean, we could do the obvious, which...
Come on, let's not check it out.
do you not want to do the obvious?
That's too easy.
Okay. What's your favorite series? Yeah.
Shut up, Scott.
No, that was not what I was thinking. That, no. I was thinking you prefer...
Like, what do you prefer? Like, standalone? Yeah. No.
See, because I happen to like original work. I like to explore something I haven't seen or read before.
Me too.
But I don't mind reading several more episodes in that new thing, right? Gene Wolfe and the Book of the New Sun was a lot of fun because it was totally unique and new for me, even though it was 5 books long, right? So... I don't know. So is that a fair question? Comfort food versus what? Well, no, we asked that earlier in the series, didn't we?
I think we did. Okay. I mean, do the people out there prefer big meaty series or do they prefer linear series versus episodic series? That's what I call them.
That's interesting.
I like that.
Yeah. That's good.
That's very another good. One.
What do you think the optimal length for a series is? 2 books, 5 books, 10 books, unlimited.
I mean, you're gonna have to say that again.
Yeah, episodic versus linear, which was what Scott was talking about with the standalone series of standalones versus one big story that's like 12 books or something.
Gotcha. Right, because most series are a single story that takes 12 books or 6 books or whatever to tell.
Well, I don't think most are. I mean, you look at all the detective stories, the detective series out there. I mean, you know, in romance series as well, are usually episodic.
And the Conan novels and the Tarzan novels going all the way back, right? Rice Burroughs wrote episodic, you know, tiny, quick bite novels, but they were what the audience wanted. Which was a 40,000 word novel 6 times a year.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I actually do like reading detective novels every once in a while, and I've gone through some episodic series of detective novels. Like I read pretty much all of Jonathan Kellerman's work. I've read most of Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child's work. You know, and those are all episodic series with like the same characters but in different situations, almost like the X-Files. I like the X-Files as well, back when that was on. So,
well, anyways, and what you're falling in love with there is the character as opposed to the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or the setting, the character who's in a setting, as opposed to the particular problem they're solving. Because it doesn't matter what the problem is. What you want to do is spend time with this set of characters.
Well, the problems have to be interesting too, but it's like when you know how the character is going to react to those problems.
Right.
You're like, Mulder's going to say that. And then Scully's going to say that.
There you go. Look at them. Yeah.
So what was the question? Was episodic versus linear?
Yes. Which one do you prefer? Okay. Do you prefer episodic or linear?
I like
Or episodic. Okay, I'm sorry.
Boo. No.
Linear story is generally what we call that.
Maybe we should call this the linear podcast.
Wait,
that sounds really boring. Okay, never
mind. Oh, I know, right?
Yeah.
I would just imagine our tone. Like, and hello, everyone. This is the linear podcast. I am once again here with Abby Goldsmith and Scott Parkin. And today we are going to be discussing, it's a very exciting episode, everybody.
It's very linear. Oh my god.
No. This podcast is anything but linear.
Chaos, baby.
We go off real all the time. That's what makes it so great.
Yeah, you have a point.
Oh god. But that's going to do it for this episode. I'm Raphael and I'm Jordan. You guys keep thinking being on Galactic Level, and this is Abby and Scott signing off. We'll catch you later.
Keeping it chaotic.
keeping it chaotic 24/7 straight up. You already know.
Yeah, I like that Scott keeps coming up with catchphrases. It's good. I can't seem to do that.
We're gonna get a catchphrase.